What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me and my trusty old Red Ryder Carbine Action 2 on the Sharp Range Model Air Rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. And have I got a packed show for you? Have I? Answer me. Have I got a packed show? Because I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Okay, I don't plan this, do I? I just sit here shouting at a microphone and then send it out and hope my three listeners enjoy it. Are you enjoying it? What's going on? Okay, that was the interactive bit. I don't think that went very well, did it, boys and girls? I don't think I've got much to report, have I? Let me think. Quickly racking my brains. No, I don't think I've got much to report. So let's just get started with this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Boys and girls, it's that part of the show that you either love, hate, or don't really care about. It's the quiz, yeah! I'm going to ask you 10 questions, you're going to think of the 10 answers, and then I've got a special guest star who's going to be here with his answers. So let's get started with question number one. Who gives an address and apostolic, I hope I said that right, apostolic blessing called Urbi et Orbi to the city and the world every Christmas day at noon? It's the same name as the Easter blessing, apparently. Question number two. Which two singers collaborated with Mariah Carey on the 2020 single Oh Santa? So there's three of them there. One of them's Mariah Carey. Who are the other two? Question number three. Who sang the opening two lines of the original version of the song Do They Know It's Christmas? Do you want me to sing them for you? I will. It's Christmas time, there's no need to be afraid, and at Christmas time we let in light and banish shade. Next one. Which 2003 black comedy film's Czech language title is, and I'm going to pronounce this wrong on purpose, Santa Je Uchil, which means Santa is a pervert? I think we all know that one. Next one. How many more sleeps did Leona Lewis sing about in the title of her 2013 number 3 hit? How many more sleeps was she singing about? Hey, eh? It's a number. Just give me the number. How many? At a church Christingle service, children are given a lighted candle set in what fruit? That's right. They're giving them a lighted candle, a naked flame, handing them out to children in an attempt to set fire to the church. That's not what their plan is. That's just the lucky side effect. Next one. Merry Teasers are a Christmas variation of Maltesers, but in the shape of what instead of the regular spheres? So my point is, Maltesers are normally a ball shaped, aren't they? A sphere, that's the word. But at Christmas, they bring out these things that are similar, and they call it a Merry Teaser. What shape is it in? I'll give you a clue. It could be a snowball. It's not a snowball. It's not a snowball. Right. Question, no, I don't know. Which devilish character appears in Germany on the night of the 5th of December, the night before the Feast of St. Nicholas, and seeks out badly behaved children? Yeah, I think we all know that one. I didn't know it was the 5th, though. Okay, oh, we're up to number 9 now. Right. In which Middle Eastern city is Manger Square? Yeah? Manger Square. Where's that? Tell me now. And the last question. Oh, here we go. Look, see? We're going to end on a high note. In which 1990 film does Kevin say to Santa's helper, "This is extremely important. Will you please tell Santa that instead of presents this year, I just want my family back?" I can do better. Here we go. "This is extremely important. Will you please tell Santa, instead of presents this year, I just want my family back?" And the Oscar goes to Jack Ford. Okay, so there's your 10 questions. Now, I've got your 10 answers. Listen to this. Okay, boys and girls, I hope you got all those right. If you didn't, I've got someone here who has. His name's Adam, and I hope you know him, because I keep plugging his podcast on my show. It's Adam Parker from, what's your show again?
The Merry Britsmas Podcast.
I know it is. yes, and he's got the answers, and he's going to tell them to you. So first question, who gives an address and apostolic, I hope I said that right, blessing called Urbi et Orbi to the city and the world every Christmas day at noon? It's the same name as the Easter blessing. Whom, Adam, whom?
I'm not a particularly religious person, even though I'm a big Christmas person, but I've had a guess based on some of the words you used, apostolic, and so my educated guess is the Pope.
Is the Pope. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Give yourself a point. Which two singers collaborated with Mariah Carey on the 2020 single Oh Santa?
I didn't know this one. I had to have a complete guess. I think I remember this song, but my guess is Beyonce and Camila Cabello was the only other pop star I could think of.
Oh, wow, that's incredible.
Is it right?
It was, no, it was Ariana Grande and Jennifer Hudson.
I'll go listen to it.
I didn't have a clue on that one either. Can't
know.
Okay, who sang the opening two lines of the original version of the song Do They Know It's Christmas?
I'm pretty sure it's Paul Young that opens
it is
the song.
Paul Young, yes. Well done. Okay, question number four. Which 2003 black comedies... This is convoluted. Which 2003 black comedy film's Czech language title is Santa Je Uchil, which means Santa is a pervert?
Great title, and I think that must be Bad Santa based on that title.
Yes, I think the title gives it away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, how many more sleeps did Leona Lewis sing about in the title of her 2013 number 3 hit?
I really like this song, and my wife doesn't. She sort of sings it in an annoying, mocking voice whenever it comes on the radio. I believe it's One More Sleep Till Christmas.
Yeah, well, I've made a dick of myself on that one because I thought it was 3 more sleeps. But yes, apparently here it says One More Sleep, yeah.
Yeah. My wife always does a One More Sleep voice whenever it comes on, and she does not like it. And I try and sing back in a much better voice because I do like it.
I like it because I know it's 11 years old, but that's one of our modern classics.
It's modern,
yeah. Yeah, you don't get that many that break it through to the yearly playlist. Next one. At a church Christingle service, children are given a lighted candle set in what fruit?
A bit of a kind of educated guess here. I think just because it's based on the size and its association with Christmas, an orange?
Did you really not know that?
I think I did in the back of my mind. I think I remember it from primary school.
Yeah. I don't think
I've been to a Christingle service since then. There's been none of the... that I've attended probably since I was at primary school.
When I was a little kid, or when I was a Cub Scout, actually, we used to have to go every year. We used to go every year. They give you your orange with a candle shoved in the top.
Yeah.
Cocktail sticks. The candle was like the Jesus was the light of the world. It had a red ribbon stuck around it. And I don't know what that was, the blood of Christ maybe. But then it had cocktail sticks shoved in it. And on the cocktail sticks were raisins. And what we'd do is we'd pull out the cocktail sticks with the raisins and cook them over the candle flame. That's what we do. But I never once ate the orange. It was a waste of oranges because it had a candle.
No, you got the wax in it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's not many other fruit that would fit really as well. You can't put it in a banana, can you? Or an apple, really.
I think you could give an apple a go. I think that would.
Yeah, you'd have to really push it in there.
You ram it in there, yeah. Yeah. But I've seen them since then because we used to always have raisins with, I think, jelly tots it was one, yeah? Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyway. Well done. Next one. Merry Teasers are a Christmas variation of Maltesers, but in the shape of what instead of the regular spheres?
My wife loves these. I think they're reindeer shaped, the Merry Teasers.
Oh, of course they bloody are. They're the big ones, aren't they?
Yeah, they're like quite chunky.
Yeah, but it's not got like Malteser in it, has it? It's got like a more of a sort of fondant.
No, it's something else in it, yeah.
That's annoying, that is, because I was thinking holly leaves, because I was imagining something smaller. So, again, I've made a dink of myself. Okay.
I always buy them for my wife. They're the one thing whenever I go. Usually, I buy myself a little one of those Cadbury's Christmas puds.
Yep.
Chocolates. I like them. And then I'll get her a little Malteser reindeer thing.
Merry Teaser. Get the name right. Get the name
right. A Merry Teaser. Sorry, Malteser branding.
Okay. Next question. Which devilish character appears in Germany on the night of the 5th of December, the night before the Feast of St. Nicholas, and seeks out badly behaved children?
I had a guess from specifics. The Krampus would be Krampus.
Yeah, it's Krampus, isn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't know he was German. I thought he's all sort of all over the place. But
well, yeah, I thought around that area.
Yeah,
Austria, that's Germany, it. Hungary, you know, Central Europe.
Yeah, but I didn't know he'd come out on the 5th of December. So there we go. Okay. We're up to number 9. In which Middle Eastern city is Manger Square?
Again, a guess. I've never heard of Manger Square, but if it's called Manger Square, surely it's got to be Bethlehem, I assume.
Yeah, Bethlehem, of course.
That's where the manger would have been, so.
And the last one, this is an easy one. In which 1990 film does Kevin say to Santa's helper, "This is extremely important. Will you please tell Santa that instead of presents this year, I just want my family back?"
It's classic. It's Home Alone.
Yeah, well done. Okay, and I believe you have scored. What did you give us? What did you get?
I think that was 9.
I think it was 9 as well. But I've only written down 8. But I think you only
Mariah Carey one wrong.
Yeah, unbelievable. And I got blooming 7, which is shame on me. Shame on me. But well done, Adam.
Thank you.
You look proud. I know you're a bit concerned that you might not score quite so well, but that was better than me, and that's always impressive. Actually, you might be the first person who's come on here and done the quiz that has scored better than me on it, live at least. I could be wrong.
There needs to be a scoreboard, some sort of like online database of who scored more than Jack. So it's a competition board, maybe.
We should, for people that come on the show. Yeah. That means I'll have to go back and listen to them. I'm not doing that. So, Adam, while you're here, do you want to tell everyone about your show? I do it most episodes anyway, but if you want to give it a plug. I'm sure the people will hear about it.
Any excuse to plug. It's called Merry Britsmas. It's a Christmas podcast, of course, but all about British Christmas things. So focused on British Christmas music, British Christmas television, traditions, anything sort of linked to a traditional experience of British Christmas. Sort of mostly nostalgic for me and any British listeners, but then maybe educational and eye-opening for any foreign listeners. Also, it's on Spotify now as well. It's finally on Spotify. So if you do want to listen on Spotify, you can find it there, as well as most other podcast apps as well.
There we go. I listen to every episode, and I believe you should too. Thanks for coming on, Adam. You did a blinding job.
Thank you very much for giving me some lovely questions that I could answer.
I know. I cherry-picked them, didn't I, for you?
British support.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers. Thank you.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
You know, we don't serve bread at the tiki bar. It is our protest against the tragic misuse of grain that could have become beer. So now is the time to address the elephant in the room. You know, that mythical fat guy who we idolize on both sides of the Atlantic, Homer Simpson. And he loves the Brits as well. His favorite show is Do Shut Up, which is about a hard-drinking, but loving family of soccer hooligans from England. This made-up parody of a British sitcom is a cornucopia of Do You Hear What I Hear-isms. As Homer likes to say, if they're not having a go with a bird, they're having a row with a wanker. In about a minute clip of this mock program, we get to hear such English expressions as cheeky, crikey, and cobbles. And it also just happens to be a Christmas episode. This explains why it starts with a Christmas tree in the background and one character presenting a beer with a bow to another and saying, "Jolly sodden, Xmas Major." Now this moment I could not ignore. Sodding? You mean like that rolled up section of grass we have here in the States that operates like a turf carpet? I knew that wasn't what they were talking about, but since these two are supposed to be representing stereotypical Cockneys, I needed to explore. I found out that sodding is used to emphasize what you're saying, especially when you're angry or annoyed. Okay, I get it. But then I learned that it was an offensive word for a person, especially a man. Okay, but it also could be used in an affectionate or a pitying way. It's a little confusing, but I guess I still understand. Oh, and by the way, it can also be used and applied to something that is difficult or causing problems. I admit it, I'm lost. I thought that maybe some context would help, but I found examples like sod off, sod it, sod that, sod you, sod all, poor sod, and sod's law. Not much help. So what does it mean? Well, it started back in the Middle Ages with the turf dwellers of Romford, a town in England. These peasant folk lived in low grass-covered houses on the banks of the Thames. In order to enter or leave one of these squats, as they were known, a piece of turf or sod would be lifted away from the door opening. The term sod off was then coined to mean the door is open, feel free to leave. The term sodding was often used to refer to unwelcome guests due to the work of lifting up the sod to see who's there. However, there is a dual etymology. It is not hard to recognize that the root of sod is Sodom. You know, that biblical city of Sodom, known for its sexual debauchery. The reason why this word came to be used as a chiefly derogatory and offensive term. Thus, in England, calling someone a sod or telling him to sod off is an insult. Now, I suppose I could go on and tell you a lot more, but I'm a bit of a lazy sod. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Oh, Bob, I think you may have been led astray there. That article you read, I think it was on a website called Dave Budd or something. Yeah, that's not where sod comes from. It's got absolutely nothing to do with turf dwellers. I researched turf dwellers, I could find nothing about them. The word sod is literally the second part of the description. You could pretty much just swap it for bugger. If you remember, kids, Bob did cover the word bugger. Well, sod and bugger, sodomy and buggery, they're pretty much interchangeable. Sod this, bugger this, sod off, bugger off, you silly old sod, you silly old bugger. They're all the same. Yeah, sod and bugger, pretty much identical. The only extra thing that Bob missed out on was sod's law. So I'm sure you're familiar with Murphy's Law, where they're saying anything that can go wrong will go wrong. As a slightly cruder version is sod's law. Well, sod's law, innit, Mush? Sod's law, yeah, sod's law. Yeah, you don't say bugger's law, but you do say sod's law. So, yeah, I think we can take the whole turf dweller bit with a grain of salt. But certainly the sodomy bit, that's what it means. Thanks for that, Bob. I'll be back again later on in the show. But right now, I'm going to do this, whether you like it or not.
Book review, book review.
Christmas.
Book review!
Boys and girls, I haven't done a book review in a little while, but this one popped up while I was doing my research on Charles Dickens doing his public readings. I don't know if you remember, I talked about that a few episodes ago. And one of the things I was reading was about other books that are influenced. And this short story that I found is nothing short of delightful. It only took me about 10 minutes to read. It's similar in tone to the story of Dickens, but it's set in the US. And it's about a man called Job Warner, who has a large family. And it's Christmas Eve and times are tough, and he asks his employer for a raise, and his employer says he'll think about it. Now, his employer isn't quite like Scrooge in this one. He's a fair, even-handed man. But then on the way home that evening, Job Warner meets a young girl who's begging, and he takes her home to his family. And that means that he can't afford to buy presents for his children. And I'm not going to tell you what happens, but it's just a delightful story. It's not long at all. Like I said, I read it in 10 minutes. Like I said, the name of it is Job Warner's Christmas, and it was written by Horatio Alger, or Alger, A-L-G-E-R. And if you just type that in to Google, it'll come up and you can read it online. I don't know if there's print copies of it out there. I guess it was originally published in a magazine. I don't know if it ever made it actually into a book form. I'll put a link in the show notes. So after you've finished listening to this, you can click on the link and have a read of the story. And it is a delightful little story. Yeah, it got me a bit choked up as I was reading it. Just really delightful Christmas story that I'm sure you'll enjoy. And then maybe pass it on to other people as well. Now it's time for this. boys and girls, in the last three episodes, I had Adam Parker on, who you just heard doing the quiz, and he and I discussed Christmas in the UK as part of Christmas All Over the World. Well, I hate to say it, kids, I'm sticking with the UK because I read a really interesting story the other day and I wanted to share it with you. And this comes from Christmas in Yorkshire. Now, at a later stage, I probably will come back to Yorkshire and talk about some of their other traditions that they have there. But this one I found particularly interesting. Now, like a lot of stuff, when you're researching it back and it goes back hundreds of years, it's very difficult to find the actual truth of what happened. So to begin with, let me stress that what I'm telling you now is legend. It's not fact. It is historically based, but there's no definitive record of what happened to create this legend happening. I read a few different stories that were all very similar, but the one that I'm going to share with you now seems to be the definitive one that people talk about. So, what I'm talking about is the Devil's Knell in Dewsbury in Yorkshire. Now, the Devil's Knell is a bell, and every Christmas Eve, the bell is rung once for every year since Christ's birth. So last Christmas, it would have been rung 2,023 times. And the way they do it is they start ringing it at about 10:30, and they finish ringing it dead on midnight of Christmas Eve. Yeah, and while they're ringing it, a service starts at about 11:15 and continues through where people have midnight mass and they sing Christmas carols. And then at midnight, the bell, which is ringing in the background, will stop ringing, and whoever was ringing the bell comes through and joins the service. The service runs from 11:15 till 12:45. Yeah, so they've actually got a little timer so they know how often to be ringing the bell to make sure, and it keeps track of how many times they've rung it, to make sure that it does actually end dead on midnight. Yeah, and from this point on, as I tell you the legend, please be well aware that this is just legend. So I'm going to tell you it, but it's not historical fact, okay? From this point on. The rest of it is all true. This next bit, not historical fact. Back in the 1400s, there was a local knight by the name of Thomas de Soothill, who was also known as Black Tom. And he found out that one of his servant boys hadn't attended church. So in a fit of rage, he grabbed the servant boy and threw him into the mill pond where the poor bugger died. Now, on his deathbed, Sir Thomas felt pretty guilty about this and so decided to leave a load of money to the church to buy a bell. And he had two stipulations. One, that he wanted the bell to ring at his funeral, which is interesting actually, because he's on his deathbed. I don't know if it's like a week before he carks it, but they got to make that bell. I don't know how long it takes to make a bell. I've never made a bell. Have you ever made a bell? You ever made a bell? Are you a bell maker? Well, if you're not a bell maker, you wouldn't know. I don't know. They got to make this bell in time for his funeral. Well, I don't know how long a bell takes. Maybe you can knock one out in a day. I don't know. But it was a massive bell. The bell was 13 CWT, which is how you measure bells, apparently. Do you know what that is in kilograms? Have a guess. I'll tell you. 660 kilograms. That's over 0.5 ton of bell. They got to knock that out before his funeral. And so, I don't know how long a bell takes to make. I do not know. Imagine it takes like 4 weeks or something. He's got this rotting corpse lying around. It's like, have you finished that bloody bell yet? Because his body is stinking up the place. It's like, well, we've made half of it. You don't make a bell in halves. You've got to make it in one piece. If it's not in one piece, it'll fall apart, okay? I don't know much about bells. I can tell you that much. Can we get back to the story? So that was one of his stipulations. The other stipulation was he wanted the bell to ring once for every year, like I said earlier, once for every year since the birth of Christ. So the year it was first rung was 1434. So they had to ring it 1,434 times. Every year they increased that by one. And that is the legend. Now, here's the thing. The reason why it's called the Devil's Knell is because the idea is that when Christ was born, the devil was killed. Well, obviously he wasn't killed because, you know, we still talk about him being around today, but that was the idea. So since then, every year, the bell has been ringing out on Christmas Eve. And the bell is called Black Tom, named after Sir Thomas. And that's interesting because it's interesting that bells get a name. Like you've got Black Tom, haven't you, obviously, this one. You've got Big Ben in London. You got Dirty Old Jack. That's, oh no, that's what my wife calls me. Okay, forget that one. But yeah, that is the name of the bell. Now, it has been recast twice. The first time was in 1825, and then again 50 years later, which is interesting, because what was wrong with the one they made in 1825? They've got one going from 1434 for nearly 400 years, and then like 50 years the next one lasts, and it's like, right, let's make another one, okay, and then the next one's lasted, what, 150-ish years? Yeah, I don't know. But that's the story of the Devil's Nail. Now, what I think is interesting is this poor lad, Miss Church. Now, I'm guessing he was skiving off. But what if it's something else? What if, like, the knight goes, why weren't you at church? I had the squits, Your Honour. You had the squits. Get in that mill pond. Get in there until you're drowned. But I can't get up. I've still got the squits. I'm wearing a poo in my pants. I don't care if you poo your pants. You get in that mill pond. And he threw him in there in a fit of rage. That is a reconstruction of exactly what happened. But then, this is what gets me, it's on his deathbed. All the places I read that he felt so guilty about it, that he bought this bell as penance because he felt so bad. Like, that's fine. But then a couple of places I read on his deathbed. It's like, so he's gone all these years after killing some poor kid. I don't know how old he was when he carked it. There's no record of that. But imagine he did it when he was in his 30s or 40s, and then he's 70 or 30 years later. That kid's been dead for 30 years. He's like, do you know what? Now that I can't spend my money anymore, why don't we buy a bell with it? Git. Yeah, so there we go. That's the story. I thought that was an interesting one. And every year, Christmas Eve, they still ring that bell. Boys and girls, it's my favourite part of the show, and it's your favourite part of the show, and it's my children's favourite part of the show, it's my wife's favourite part of the show, it's my husband's favourite part of the show, it's my uncle's favourite part of the show, my nephew's favourite part of the show, my auntie's favourite part of the show, my niece's favourite part of the show. Everyone hates it, alright? Everyone hates it, but I'm doing it anyway. Why do mummies love Christmas? Because of all the wrapping. There, it's over. What am I doing? What am I doing here? I shouldn't be here. I'm the bit before the theme music, and I'm in the middle of the show. How can the bit before the theme music be in the middle of the show? The theme music was ages ago, and I'm completely lost, and I don't know what to do, and I've already missed the theme music. So how can I be the bit before the theme music? But that's what I am. I'm going to say it, but I don't know why. Run the theme music. There's time for this. In our world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy. Bob's back, boys and girls. You missed him. I certainly missed him. It meant while he was gone, I had to do some work. But he's here now, and he's wonderful.
Thanks, Jack. During the Christmas season, many people will make a donation to their local food bank or to a homeless shelter to help their neighbors in need. It is a festive time when people feel gratitude and enjoy a giving spirit. This desire to give provides a high volume of supplies during the Yuletide. Unfortunately, homelessness isn't seasonal. It doesn't start in November, and it doesn't end after the holidays. Sadly, as Christmas cheer fades, so do those contributions to the food banks and charities. Now, the high influx of donations in December do make a difference. However, it can also leave fewer supplies for the rest of the year. So what about making a donation now? You can still make it a bit festive. Do it for Leon Day on the 25th. Or maybe, when out shopping, you can add a few extra canned goods, some personal hygiene products, or new pairs of socks and underwear. Put them into a big wrapped box without a top. Drop it off on June 25th and make it your half-year Christmas present. This is an obvious way to spread a smile of joy with a nod to the holidays. You can also give money, because there's a lot they can do with that. If you know of another way to produce a smile of joy, you offer it up to Jack. He'll share it with me. And together, we can all throw our arms around the world.
Yeah, that's another good one. Bob's right there. Charitable donations do go right through the roof at Christmas time, but then sort of taper off through the rest of the year. I mean, people are constantly giving, but it's not quite the same. So yeah, maybe use Leon Day. It's coming up, kids. We're only a month away from it, month and a bit. So maybe use Leon Day as a time to give again. Yeah, great one there, Bob. And if you're not listening to Bob's podcast, why aren't you? We have discussed this every episode since this podcast came out, and you still refuse to listen to it. That's the ones that aren't listening. If you are listening, you don't have to listen to this bit. I'm not asking you, I'm telling you. Go and listen to his podcast, okay? Thank you. Right, what's next then? Oh, it's this. Oh, you're going to like this. Or hate it. I don't know. I don't know how you feel about these things. I can't look into your brain. If I could look into it, all I'd see is like grey mush. So I don't want to look at your brain. Stop showing me your brain. And listen to this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
So, boys and girls, in the last episode, you may remember that I covered a YouTube version of A Christmas Carol that was done with marionettes. Well, this is another puppet version, but this one is... it's very hard to explain without you watching it, but it's all done with cardboard puppets, and they're not marionettes, and they're not glove puppets either. I'll try and describe it as I go. So this is created by Messrs, that's how they've written it, Messrs, Ian and Sam and Jim. And it's from the fantastic Cardboard Cabinet of Stories, brought to you by Polka Theatre. Now, Polka Theatre is based in Brighton in the UK. And what happened was, in 2020, because of COVID, they couldn't put on any stage shows. So they did a few videos that if you went to their website, you could watch them. And this is one of those. So it's on YouTube, like I said, and it's only had about 1.9 thousand views, but it's only been on YouTube for a couple of years. It was originally, like I said, available to watch if you went on the Polka Theatre website. And it's only 18 minutes long, and I'm going to describe it to you. What you're looking at is like a cardboard theatre stage. It's all made out of cardboard. Everything in it is made out of cardboard. And there's a chap behind the stage, and you can see that the upper part of his torso, just sort of the top of his chest, his shoulders and his head, and he's wearing a top hat. He's wearing a Dickensian costume. This is a chap called Ian Nicholson, and he does all the voices pretty much and all the acting in the show. And he starts off saying that he's going to tell the story of A Christmas Carol. And most of the puppets and scenery comes in from the sides of the stage. And it starts off with like a street scene made of cardboard. It's all made of cardboard. Now, they use these a few times. They're very small cutout silhouettes of people, and they're on a stick, and you can just sort of like bring them into scene. And it starts off as a couple of ladies, like as if they're talking in the street. And then we see Fred. We don't see Scrooge at this point, but Ian Nicholson, he does the voice of Scrooge, and pretty much he asks Scrooge to come to dinner, and Scrooge says no. Now, like the previous version, and like many versions I've covered, they quote the original text, or at least the language in the original text, but not quite. They change it a lot in this one, more so probably than the last one. I think this is aimed at younger children. I think probably sort of like 4, 5, 6 years old upwards. So, you know, I enjoyed it, but I think it's really aimed at kids, especially the way it's spoken. Anyway, we've got Fred. He talks to Scrooge. Then out come the charity collectors, and they refer to them as charity collectors, not portly gentlemen. They ask Scrooge for some money, and he, of course, says no. Then we're in Scrooge's counting house. What they do here is they have like two cut-out profiles of Scrooge in his top hat. It's just his head and his hand, and Cratchit, and it's just his head and his collar. Again, this is just a two-dimensional profile of them. And Cratchit asks for the day off, and Scrooge agrees, but he doesn't want to agree. Then we go to Scrooge's door with the door knocker, and this is quite well done, actually. So what you've got is, it is literally a door. There it is on the little stage, and the narrator, Ian Nicholson, is talking about Scrooge's door, and then suddenly he sees Scrooge's face, and as he says this, he puts his head behind the door, and the door sort of splits open, and there's his face, and he sort of screams or whatever, and then it closes again. I like that, the way they did that, it was interesting. Then Scrooge is in his counting house, and Marley is just a skull. again a two-dimensional profile of a skull, and the jaw is moving up and down as he's talking to Scrooge. And again, Ian Nicholson is playing Scrooge, and they have a conversation, obviously explaining that three ghosts are going to come and visit him. And just before Marley leaves, one of his eyeballs pops out and his jaw drops off. Yeah, and then he goes. So it's like, don't forget to take those with you, Marley. So then Scrooge goes to bed, and it's interesting how they've done this, because again, Ian Nicholson is like playing Scrooge, and they've got like a sheet of what looks like bedclothes that they just sort of slide into frame and put it up to his neck as if he's in bed. You know, it's something, it works. And who should turn up but the Ghost of Christmas Past. Now, the Ghost of Christmas Past looks very similar to the one in The Muppets Christmas Carol, I thought. And they do this nice flying scene, so now you get a very small cutout of Scrooge and a very small cutout of the Ghost of Christmas Past, and they want a stick, and they're sort of flying up in the air, and as they're flying, beneath them, moving across underneath them, is a cardboard cutout of the city. And so it does look like they're flying over the city. And then that recedes as they go into the past, and we see an old school, and in the window there's a silhouette of a little boy writing at his desk. And this is the only scene we get from The Ghost of Christmas Past. Yeah, and as he tells the story, the narrator, Ian Nicholson, he sort of says this is when Scrooge began to hate Christmas, because he was shunned by his friends and his loved ones. But that's all you get, and that's a shame, because I don't really feel like that's what's coming across in the book. So it's a shame that the one scene they've used, they've actually twisted. But still, that's what they've got. Then Scrooge is back in his bed, and now the Ghost of Christmas Present turns up, and the Ghost of Christmas Present is actually just a wrapped box with eyes and a bow around him, and he opens up and closes like his mouth, and he's the Ghost of Christmas Present. And he talks very much like Adrian Edmondson's character Vivian in the TV show The Young Ones. Now, if you're too young to remember The Young Ones, it was a great show from the 80s. Fantastic show it was. Real classic of his time. It's aged a lot now. I suppose it's what, nearly 40 odd years old. So I'll play a bit. This is what Vivian sounds like.
It's funny, but being ill makes me lose my usual tolerant and easygoing approach to communal living.
And this is what the Ghost of Christmas Present sounds like.
I am the Ghost of Christmas Present!
No, it's not Christmas present like present, it's present like, right now, like here, present.
I am right now here, present.
See, not that different, are they? Now, I really like the way they've done this. So the Ghost of Christmas Present shows Scrooge other people's Christmas. And the way they've done it is they have boxes, wrapped boxes, and it looks just like a present. But then when they turn it round, the back of the box is open and there's like silhouettes inside of what's going on. So the first one he sees, he has this present, turns it round, and there is Fred and his family all having a wonderful time. Then the next two are Bob Cratchit carrying Tiny Tim on his shoulder, and the other one is him throwing Tiny Tim up in the air. And then the fourth box he brings out, turns it around, and it's the scene of all the Cratchit family sat around having their Christmas dinner. Now, remember that I said this is only 18 minutes long, so they cut out a lot of stuff. But I did like the way they did this. I thought it was very effective. I mean, a lot of what they did is very, very effective. They've really done a good job, and this particularly stood out to me. And then Scrooge says, okay, I've had enough of this, go away, leave me alone. And the Ghost of Christmas Present comes back in, but he's got a little bit smaller, and he goes, no, go away, and he comes back in, he's got even smaller, go away, come comes back in again, even smaller. I think it's only four times. Might be, he might come back in again, even smaller. And then he finally leaves, and the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come turns up. Now, do you remember in the last episode I was saying the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come looked like a Jawa from Star Wars? Well, this one looks a bit like a Jawa, because he has got the eyes, so it's a completely black hood. And there are two eyes in there. They're not glowing red or orange like a proper Jawa, so that's a shame. They're just white eyes. But he's also got remarkably chubby hands for a Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. Normally, you'd think his hands would be really bony and long. But no, this guy, he's got chubby fingers, and he's like, right, come with me. And the first bit we see is a bunch of cut-out heads. There's three at the top, and there's three hanging down from the bottom. Three of them are meant to be thieves, and three of them are meant to be rich people. And there's a very short scene. I'll play it for you, actually. Have a listen.
And the ghost showed Scrooge a group of businessmen and a group of thieves, both talking about someone who had just died.
I thought
he'd never die.
We're glad he's dead.
And both groups laughed. And Scrooge felt very sorry for whoever they were talking about.
Yeah, and what I like is the main difference between the two groups. Like, you've got the thieves at the top, posh people at the bottom. The thieves have got different moustaches to the rich people. They're also wearing different hats, but it's the moustaches that really tells the class of a gentleman. And all three thieves have got the same moustache, and all three posh blokes have got the same moustache. Yeah, interesting, I suppose. Then, the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come shows some other scenes, and what they've got now is more drab versions of the presents I mentioned earlier. Do you remember when I said about it's like a gift-wrapped box, and when you turn it round on the back, you can see inside, and it's got a silhouette? Well, these are exactly the same as the Cratchit family ones, but you've got Bob Cratchit, but there's no one sitting on his shoulder, and it's a lot more drab and dark. And then the other box, he turns it around, and it's him throwing Tiny Tim up in the air, but he ain't throwing anything up in the air, because Tiny Tim's gone. And the final one they show us is the whole family, and they're all sitting down, apart from in the middle, there's an empty seat where Tiny Tim should be sat. Again, very effective way of doing it. I was very impressed. Now, the final scene from The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is a gravestone, and it's all wrapped up in brown paper, and Scrooge is saying, you know, oh, who was that nasty man they were talking about? And he peels the paper off. It's like he unwraps the brown paper, and there's the gravestone saying Ebenezer Scrooge. Then Scrooge wakes up, and he's back in his bed, and we hear that he's a changed man, and he goes out into the street, and in the street he sees Fred. So he doesn't go around Fred's house, he actually sees Fred there, and he says, Fred, I'm going to be a better uncle, I'll come around and I'll see you. Then he sees the two charity collectors, and he says he's going to give them some money, and then he goes around to Bob Cratchit's house. Now, you don't see a scene of Bob Cratchit's house. All you see is some decorations, some paper chain garlands, and a Christmas tree. And he actually says he took round some decorations and a Christmas tree. Doesn't mention a turkey, because he doesn't have a turkey, which is a real shame, because that's the one thing that we know Scrooge does do for Cratchit on Christmas Day, is give him a big old turkey. And that is how the story ends, with no turkey, but a very happy ending. And the very final bit is the credits come in, and it tells us that it was designed and made by a chap called Samuel Wilde, and he was assisted by Alana Ashley. It was directed, written, and performed by Ian Nicholson, the chap that, well, was performing it, obviously, and Sally Edwards. And at this point, the person that's been helping him, like doing the puppets from the sides and passing stuff in and out of scene, she sticks her head around a corner and gives us a nice smile. And I'm pretty sure she also did the voices of the Ghost of Christmas Past and the Ghost of Christmas Present. And then finally it says, for Woofy, Gig, Feather and Peach. And I've no idea who they are, but the outsides of the theatre, which was all made of cardboard, like I said earlier, there is pictures on it, and one's of a feather, one's of a peach, one's of a dog. I'm not sure where Gig is in all that, but yeah, I did spot that as I was watching it. All in all, it's only 18 minutes long. It's quite light on the story, but it's just so effective the way they've made it. It's very clear that a lot of effort and love has been put into it, and I think you'll be impressed with the way they've used recycled cardboard to make all these fantastic props to do the show. So yeah, I'm saying on this one, it's 18 minutes, why not give it a shot? I think you'll be impressed. Next episode, I'm going to be doing another version of A Christmas Carol using puppets. This one's completely different though, and I think you'll enjoy that as well. But right now, we're going to do this. Boys and girls, this episode's recommendation, I've recommended it before, right? But I've just got back into it again. So, LibriVox. LibriVox is a place that you can listen to audiobooks for free that are in the public domain. So the week before last, I listened to The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. Now, I've watched the film a number of times. I remember the TV show, The Adventure of Huck Finn and His Friends, and that covered both books through the whole length of the series. But I've never actually read the book or actually heard the audiobook. I have now, kids. And then this last week, just gone, I listened to The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. And I've got to tell you, kids, they use the N-word an awful lot in that book. An awful lot. I'm not impressed. It was of its time, I suppose. So, yeah, I enjoyed both the books. But of course, there are so many others on there. In the past, I've listened to the original Tarzan book by Edward Rice Burroughs. I've listened to a couple of versions on there of A Christmas Carol. They've got about six different versions on there, you know, of that one, if you want to listen to that. All the Dickens ones are on there. And also, about a month ago, I listened to Jungle Book as well. I don't know if you've ever read The Jungle Book. It's really interesting because it's not that similar to any of the film versions they've done of it. And The Jungle Book doesn't just cover the creatures in the film, The Jungle Book. It also covers a story about a seal and also the story of Rikki Tikki Tavi as well, which was made into a cartoon, I remember, from the 70s or 80s. Anyway, if you want to get a bit of culture into your life, then why not have a listen to some of the books on LibriVox? It's completely free. You just download them and have a listen. Yeah. I'll be doing it again soon because I fancy giving the Sherlock Holmes books a go. I've read a number of those, but it's a lot easier to listen to them, and I'm going to be doing that. So that's this episode's recommendation, LibriVox.org. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. And that is it for this episode. I want to say a big thank you to Adam Parker for coming on and doing the quiz. And I also want to say thank you to Bob Baker for his fantastic segments. If you've got something you want to share with us about a good way to spread a smile of joy, then please do send it in and I will share it with Bob and he will share it back with all of us. I'm going to be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch, email at totalchristmas@gmail.com or the website is totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.
If you were Santa, you could do magic.
You want to see some magic? Here, let's watch you disappear.